Hello and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You, a podcast that celebrates the work of writer-director Christopher Nolan. I'm your host, Emily Murray, and today I'm joined by film journalist Matt Matem to discuss the recent trailer for his next movie, Oppenheimer, which hits cinemas next month. We also chat about Matt's interviews with Nolan about the movie and much more. Hi Matt, and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You, which I still struggle to not sing because it is after the ABBA song. People say, is it Alan Partridge or ABBA? And unfortunately, it's ABBA, not Partridge. I'm sorry, Matt. Sorry to let you down.
I was just about to say, aha.
Well, you can still go, aha.
No, that's okay. Thanks for actually having me.
No worries. For those who don't know who you are, just want to intro yourself?
So yes, I am the deputy editor of Total Film magazine, and I've been lucky enough to interview Christopher Nolan a few times.
Lovely. So yeah, I will talk about that later, about what that experience is like. But I know that you're a massive fan of Nolan, hence why you're here talking to me about Oppenheimer. But I sort of want to take it back to the beginning about, do you remember what was the first Christopher Nolan film that you saw? Like, where were you? What was it?
Yes, I have pretty vivid memories of it, and it was Memento. And I remember reading about it in a magazine and like reading this 5-star review and just thinking it just sounded amazing and just couldn't get my head around this, how the scenes unfolded backwards. Like I was just so kind of, sort of intrigued by this idea and was just desperate to see it. But at the time, sort of where I lived, there was just, a couple of multiplex cinemas that never really showed anything interesting. So I really had to wait and just rented it as soon as it came out and just kind of absolutely loved it. And then just kind of carried on from there really. And saw Insomnia at the cinema, and then when I heard he was making a Batman film, and like Batman's my kind of like, favorite pop culture thing, it's like my Star Wars, as they say. So
okay, yeah,
I was literally like, oh my goodness, like the director of Memento is making a Batman film, like I can't wait for this. And I loved Christian Bale as well from like American Psycho, so it just seemed like, wow, this is just everything converging for me. And just have kind of carried on, sort of obsessed ever since then, really.
Yeah, it's a good obsession to have when we share. Was it Memento then that really you were like, wow, this guy is like quite something? Or as you say, is it more like an evolving thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, like then I felt like it was something special then, I think. Yeah, I was so blown away by that film. And I remember kind of thinking then, to kind of make a mental note to sort of follow whatever he does next. But yeah, I guess it's then has grown over the years, I suppose, with the more films that have come out. And there's most of Nolan's films I would give 5 stars personally. The only ones I wouldn't would be Following, which I still think is like a really interesting film and kind of amazing for the budget and the sort of ambition of it, and as a calling card. But obviously it's not like, it doesn't hold up kind of compared to the others if you just watch it on its own as a sort of standalone film. And then Insomnia, which I still think is just a really great thriller, but that to me would be kind of like a solid 4 stars, just a really, really well made thriller, like extremely watchable, still kind of has that cool intriguing hook. But I just obviously don't love it quite as much as I love all the others, which I would just give all of them 5 stars and watch them any day I could, but yeah.
Well, I'm glad you give Dark Knight Rises 5 stars. It's a running theme on my podcast, but I'm always at war with my boyfriend who thinks it's a 3-star film. And I'm like, no, this is, if we were married, it's literally divorce material, I think. So I'm glad to hear that. Although I think Insomnia is one of my, not my favourites, but I think one of his like most underrated. I prefer it to some of his others, but I know it's perhaps is like less seen, less appreciated. I don't know, it sort of lives like under the radar, doesn't it, Insomnia?
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it was, again, it's still quite amazing. You actually think kind of, again, going from the sort of relative low budget of Memento and it being this intriguing little sort of indie thing. And then to kind of step up with those like massive stars and just make this really classy sort of studio thriller. And obviously it was, it kind of led to Batman, really. So I'll always kind of respect it for that. But I guess it's up there with ones that I revisit less often than the others. And I actually revisited it when on the Total Film podcast, we did a sort of countdown just before Tenet, actually. And so I revisited it for that. And I was like, oh, wow, this is actually really good. it's not at all. I wouldn't kind of throw shade at it or anything. But yeah, it's just the one of the only one of two that I wouldn't actually give 5 stars personally.
Yeah, interesting. And I do have to ask you about your favorite Nolan. What is it
Yeah,
and why?
this is really, really difficult. But
I know, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
if it's like kind of guns ahead, and this is the one I went for when I was invited to vote on Sight and Sounds poll that they do every 10 years, and I had to limit myself to one per director because otherwise Nolan and Kubrick would have just completely dominated my 10. And I thought, right, I've got to get some variety in there. And I obviously thought lots about it, and what I ended up going for was the same as what I think yours is, which is The Dark Knight.
I too put that on my Sight and Sound
Now,
poll,
did you?
but I was naughty and I put two Nolan down, Matt. I didn't limit myself. I have no control.
So, okay, that's cool. So I wasn't alone in voting for that. And yeah, so and part, like, I mean, there's so many reasons. Again, partly what I said about loving Batman as well, so I kind of having that love for the character and then just loving that film so much. I love Heath Ledger as an actor. He was always one of my favorite actors. And I don't think I've ever been quite so obsessed about a film before it's come out as The Dark Knight. And in a way that makes me feel a little bit sad is I almost feel like I won't ever be quite that excited again, simply because that was a time where, again, I said all those things that I love Batman Begins and I loved Heath Ledger. So the thought of him as a Joker, I was really excited about that. And it was one of those things where I just was literally on forums and stuff every day, like every possible like bit of news that came out, or every possibly I was just truly, truly obsessed and truly sort of counting down to it coming out. And I remember getting, like, I saw I Am Legend at the cinema and I really didn't like it, but I went to see it again at IMAX because it had the prologue playing ahead of it, and I just had to see that. And so I had to sit through I Am Legend again because of it, but it was totally worth it. Yeah. And yeah, and it's just, and so it just was one of those films, especially the first time I saw it, it just felt like a film made for me almost. Like, that's just like someone's just taken
I
everything
get
I
that,
like,
yeah.
yeah, and put it into a film. So that's why I end up, that's my kind of gun to head answer. But there's many that I could argue the case for, to be honest.
Yeah, it's my favorite as well. So I'm glad I'm not the only one. But I think, well, I've spoken about this on the podcast a lot, but I was really scared. I hated the cinema, I hated film until I saw The Dark Knight, and then it changed everything for me. So it's mad how, like, one film has that power, isn't it? But
Yeah.
I kind of wish I was there for like the build up in a way, but I sort of just was dragged by my dad to go see it. He is a big Christopher Nolan fan and Batman
That's cool.
fan.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
cool.
I'm also glad that I'm not the only one who goes to see the other movies. So I remember seeing like Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol because it had the prologue for The Dark Knight Rises. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who goes to see other films. But I didn't see the I Am Legend with the prologue.
That was it was just exciting just seeing it on because it was obviously filmed in IMAX as well. That was one of my first, I suppose, yeah, maybe my first taste of actually seeing something shot in IMAX on an IMAX screen. So that was quite amazing as well.
So, as you mentioned earlier, you've interviewed Nolan quite a few times. Like, are you happy to talk about what that
Yeah.
experience is like? I think our listeners will be keen to hear.
One of the real privileges of the job, of course, and it's one that is obviously extremely exciting and obviously a bit nerve-wracking as well because of all the people you don't want to come across as an idiot in front of
I
or
know, he's a
be
smart
unprepared
man.
for. Yeah, but it's always had great experiences. And he's just what well, yeah he's obviously, I mean, obviously a great interviewee, and he's one of those people who just, as you must know from your interview experience as well, sometimes when you speak to people it's really doesn't come out that sort of grammatically correctly, and it can be a bit rambly, or kind of people can just kind of go all over the place and go off on different tangents and topics. But I find he's one of those people that you could literally just print everything that comes out of his mouth. It just kind of comes out perfectly, sort of grammatically correctly, and just every he's kind of incapable of saying something sort of uninteresting. And so it's obviously always really exciting, always a true kind of massive highlight. And and I've just yeah I've kind of the two of the sort of the biggest highlights for me work-wise really were, I was on set of Tenet for the scene. It was the scene just as the plane has crashed in what's kind of supposed to be Oslo, at the Freeport. Yeah, and it was actually filmed in California, but just the sort of the aftermath of that scene where the plane has crashed into the building. And then for Oppenheimer, I got to visit, do a sound mix visit when they were sort of, you know, in post-production and sort of tweaking the soundtrack. And yeah, so those have been two, yeah, just immense highlights, and just, you just can't believe sort of, yeah, like that I kind of got to do this, really. It's sort of just true pinch me moments. And yeah, and in both those cases, I'd say what's interesting is because obviously his films are so huge scale, so ambitious, you know, just massive blockbusters, but they feel surprised. Both those situations, are on set and in the post-production, feel surprisingly calm, really. Like there's just an air of calm. I don't know if it's just because he obviously works with a lot of the same people over again, so that they have these kind of, you know, really good solid working relationships, and I guess he's in a position where he can command the best of the best to work with, so
yeah,
everyone who's with him really, I guess, must be at the very top of their game in their sort of chosen field. But yeah, everything always seems kind of calm and smooth that I've witnessed, and in a way, I guess you would expect that from Nolan. But that's been a sort of interesting aspect of it, and
What was the first film you interviewed him for, then? So you've done Tenet, yeah. Oppenheimer.
The first one was Dunkirk, actually, because I did most of the feature for that, and we did a sort of a special, like Christopher Nolan's supplement magazine that came with that issue.
Oh, cool.
Which I edited. But I didn't actually get to do the interview with him then, basically because I was my first child was very close to being born, so I just couldn't
but
fly
Matt
out at that
Nolan,
time.
Your first
I know
child.
it was genuinely it was a huge thing to weigh up. But then, as luck would have it, Dunkirk ended up being voted our film of the year in 2017. So we interviewed him for the sort of review of the year roundup for that. So I got to interview then. So that was the first time, and then yeah, then times have followed since then on Tenet and now Oppenheimer. But yeah, but that was the first one really, for the Dunkirk review of the year.
God, Dunkirk seems like... I still remember because that came out on my graduation day. So I skipped my graduation. Well, I saw I graduated, and then me and my dad ran to the cinema to go see Dunkirk and left my mum and my sister like just at the graduation party to go see it. So it seems like I still like remember it as yesterday, but it was 6 years ago then,
yeah,
2017.
And I think anything that happened for me as well, I don't know if it's the same for you, but anything that happened before the pandemic, that's just completely warped any sense of time. Like some things just feel much longer ago, but then other things feel like you've just wiped out that sort of 2 years and it doesn't really count, you know. But yeah, Dunkirk feels like a long time ago for me again, maybe because of that thing, that having a child born that year, and then I also had a child born around the time that Tenet came out as well, so I don't know what that says about me. But then no Oppenheimer children, so
no Oppenheimer
two,
children,
yeah, two's enough for me, but.
Well, we are going to talk about Oppenheimer, but yes, Before we dive in, I have an announcement, which is the first ever live episode of this podcast is happening in June, and tickets are on sale now. So I'm working with the great team at Cultplex, which are an independent cinema in Manchester, which is where I currently am, on their Christopher Nolan season. They're showing all his films in the build-up to Oppenheimer, and it's all kicking off with a screening of Memento. So I'll be doing an intro, and after the film, I'll be hosting a live episode of the podcast with some very special guests joining my panel. So it's all taking place on the 11th of June, and tickets are on sale now on the Cultplex website, and hopefully I can see some lovely listeners there. Right, Oppenheimer, Matt, which is why you're here. It's why we're both here to talk about. So we will talk about the trailer, but I sort of want to know what your reaction was when the project was first announced. Like, did you expect it? Do you sort of see it coming? Did it excite you?
Yeah, like, I suppose it was one of those things where I wasn't hugely familiar with Oppenheimer as a figure. Like, obviously, I guess like everyone, I knew the name and kind of, you know, I was aware of the Manhattan Project as a thing. And of course, I was, you know, everyone's aware of what they kind of created, but could have told you next to nothing about the man. And there's obviously that reference in Tenet to Oppenheimer,
yeah,
which is interesting. and so again, that was probably one of the times the time I'd most recently heard about him. And this was something that I haven't been able to find again since. So tell me if you know this or don't know this, because I may have just made this up. But I'm sure I've read somewhere that Robert Pattinson gifted Nolan a book of Oppenheimer speeches as a rap gift for Tenet. I'm sure I read that somewhere. But since when Oppenheimer was announced, I tried to find that. I looked back at all the places I thought I might have seen that.
Like,
and could
all
not
the Reddit
find
boards.
Evidence.
Yeah.
Yes. So maybe I just made that up. It's quite possible. But it sounds believable, doesn't it? But apologies if I have just made that up. But so I wasn't hugely surprised that it would be something he would tackle. I guess because of being unfamiliar with Oppenheimer, I guess compared to some of his films, like I guess when you hear Tenet, it's this like international espionage thing that just immediately sounds like obviously super exciting. Dunkirk, I was more familiar with what that was. Obviously, Interstellar just sounds like this huge sci-fi thing.
Sci-fi, yeah.
But I suppose, yeah, I was a bit more like, oh, what's going to be the Nolan sort of angle on Oppenheimer? And I knew it was based on the book, so I got the book.
Have you read the book?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I've listened to the audiobook, which is about 26 hours long or something.
Okay.
And I've sort of dipped into the book as well for sort of, you know, referencing things. But it's one of those things, it's really interesting. It's incredibly well researched, and I think it was like a quarter of a century they spent putting it together. But yeah, there's so much going on in there that like it's really interesting. I found it obviously gave me a good sort of, you know, a good idea about the man and his life. But I mean, there's so much going on, and there's so many characters. I frequently have to, like, when I'm thinking about something in relation to the film, I have to sort of dip back into the book. But that's why it's handy to have the actual book and the index, because then you're like, right, who was that character again? Like,
yeah.
And then go back and sort of reread that bit, because yeah, it's just obviously he had such a long and kind of fascinating life, and the book goes into just such ridiculous detail because there's just so much to draw on, I suppose, like so many different interviews, so many sort of transcripts from things that happened in his life and all that kind of stuff. And it really starts right in his very early life. And so it's sort of immensely detailed. I'm not a huge biography reader. I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for the sort of Nolan connection. But yeah, it's just a lot going on in there. It's sort of a fascinating life. So I don't know how it really compares to, you know, your just standard historical biography, because I don't read him that much. But yeah, it's a very, very interesting book. And I imagine I'll sort of dip back into it for reference once I've seen the film. But yeah.
Yeah. I need to read it. So the book, I don't think we said the name, but it's American Prometheus.
Yes. Yes.
It's on my reading list. I'm just like you, like I'm not a big reader of like biographies, or like even I did history at uni, like I'm not like I feel like doing history at uni, like I did history in English, that like, has killed all reading for me. But maybe I'll do the audiobook. I've got a very long flight coming up soon to America, so sounds like perfect for that, because I am interested to see how it compares to the book and how he takes this biography and make it into a movie. So we should talk about the trailer, which was released 2 weeks ago. I'm very late to it for a trailer breakdown, but work has been busy, Matt, hasn't it?
Yes, yes.
So I was looking to see this on the big screen. I don't know if you've seen it on the big screen, but it played in front of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 for me, which I didn't expect, because I think typically in the US they're tied, aren't they? But I wasn't sure about the UK, so I was quite excited in the cinema. I told my friends to shut up as soon as it started playing. But I was wondering, what was your first reaction to seeing the trailer?
Yeah, I watched it at home on my computer when I first saw it. And it dropped at like early in the morning on a Sunday morning in the UK
really
time.
Yeah.
And I just immediately had to, I was just kind of getting breakfast prepared, but immediately had to just stop and go and sort of have a look at it. But yes, and then I saw it on a big screen the other day, strangely, with a kind of what I would say is quite an incongruous film really for it to play with, which was Fast X. Fast 10. I never know whether to say Fast X or Fast 10, but
I think it's X, but yeah. I don't know. I suppose both are Universal, because obviously he's working with Universal.
Yes, it was Universal, and this was a press screening as well of Fast. So I would almost say, because they've been like kind of, it was one of those press screenings where they'd been like blasting out kind of
like a DJ.
Like a disco in this sort of there was DJs, there were lights. So I wouldn't necessarily say the crowd were kind of the most primed for the Oppenheimer trailer, but I still appreciated it. So I did get to see it on the big screen as well. And I've watched it a few times at home. And I mentioned like The Dark Knight earlier as well, that kind of obsession I had in the build up to that coming out. And I watched those trailers so many times. I still could probably just kind of recite the trailers. And like when I watch the films back, you know, I kind of remember like lines that I watched so many times in the trailers. And since then I sort of have calmed down a bit.
Just a bit.
I try to sort of, you know, limit it a bit, just because I don't want to sort of ruin it for myself by just obsessing so much over it. But yes, I still can't resist, and I've still watched this one quite a few times. But you know, not on that kind of daily level I had with The Dark Knight.
Like, does it still like impress you though? Because like, even like, this is my thing with Oppenheimer, right? Like, I kind of know going in, because I'm literally have a podcast with Christopher, but I'll probably like this movie, you know. But I'm always still like impressed by whenever I see a trailer. I'm like, oh, it looks like he's done it again. Like, do you still have that feeling then when you see a trailer?
But what I thought was particularly, sort of impressed about this trailer, this sort of, you know, the latest full length kind of, you know, I imagine it's gonna be the final proper trailer, is how it made it much more, that they really made it feel like a sort of thriller, you know, like, again, you have your expectations of what you might expect from a historical biopic, especially again if you've read a kind of, you know, 800 page tome about its life. But then, and you think, oh, is this going to have as much kind of commercial appeal as some of his other films, perhaps because it's not, you know, a big sort of sci-fi adventure or anything like that. But then when you see that, you're like, wow, it just looks really exciting, you know. And something about it as well, which, and this is one of the things why I've always just loved Nolan's films, is I love his sort of commitment to doing things practically and sort of shooting on film. So when you see them, and when you get to see, like, yeah, a new trailer giving you a bit more of a glimpse of it, they just kind of look like hardly any other films, you know, that you get these days, where they're not just sort of pixels and, you know, this really sort of artificial kind of feeling. Like, I saw The Little Mermaid the other day, which I enjoyed, but it feels very synthetic, the whole film.
Yeah,
really.
I've seen that. Whereas, I know what you mean.
Yeah, whereas when you get something like this, where you can just see there's real locations, you know, there's this, they've done these sort of practical effects, you know, sort of for real, and that they've, you know, they've used basically real things that they photographed, as opposed to just creating things in a computer. You've obviously got the large format film, like, you know, the IMAX and 65mm film. And so it just looks like there's just something about it. It just has that kind of classy quality, and it has that sort of realness to it, which, you know, I think you just get in so few sort of blockbuster type films these days. So yeah, I think it's sort of impressive how much they've made a historical biopic look like a blockbuster, basically.
Yeah, it has a lot of tension. I think a lot of that is due to the music. It's Ludwig Göransson who does the score here, who did it on Tenet. I think, was that the first time they worked together? Was on Tenet. Although I've been a fan of Ludwig since he wrote the New Girl theme, which is my favorite TV show ever.
He's amazingly versatile, isn't he?
And has great hair. His hair is incredible. But it's interesting what you say about doing it for real, because I watched a trailer again today to refresh for the podcast. There's some lines that really make me laugh. Like, Matt Damon says, let's recruit some scientists. And I think last week there was a report that they hired actual real life scientists for it. So I don't know if that's like a self-aware nod, because obviously they do hire scientists, but it did make me laugh. But it's what you were saying, that he's so committed to making it real, like bringing out authenticity, that literally they have real scientists as extras, you know, in his film.
And they did do some filming at the real Los Alamos as well, like some interiors. Like, I think that you kind of can't really shoot sort of proper exteriors there now, because it's so sort of built up and touristy, and there's sort of Starbucks around and stuff like that. But I think they shot some of the interiors, and he said kind of in the interview with him I had sort of for this one, that that it was handy because there were people there on hand that obviously knew so much about it that they could kind of just check things with them when they were there, you know, because there's these, you know, it's kind of based like a museum sort of now almost, that people can go and visit. But so there's people there that are just hugely knowledgeable about what actually went on.
That's amazing. I do want to talk a bit about sort of the sets and the landscapes. So I think the trailer does a really good job of capturing how empty that land is. This year has all these sort of sprawling shots of the land. It just feels like, I don't know, quite haunting, like how empty this space is. And they sort of are building a town in the middle of nowhere. Did that impress you, sort of just this landscape, I suppose?
Yeah, and then especially, I mean, that's one thing I'd say after having read the book as well, that's sort of, you know, because there's so much is about Los Alamos in the book, but then to actually kind of see it and to see it, on that scale, and there's something about that when you see it in IMAX, you know, this stuff that's filmed in IMAX that kind of completely fills that IMAX screen. And it just creates this, there's just a kind of vastness to it that you just don't get even on the kind of biggest screens, you know, in kind of standard cinemas. There's just something about it, that combination of, and I remember again thinking this in The Dark Knight, when that just had select sequences, so you got that, you know, for certain scenes you got the full IMAX ratio, and it just has a sort of like, just like a sort of resolution to it, and it just becomes so sort of immersive. Like some of the sort of cityscape shots you got at that in The Dark Knight, I just remember thinking, like, you know, I just was completely blown away. And obviously that kind of, you know, that got the whole ball rolling, really. Yeah, so and so then to see that, the scale of the, you know, the New Mexico kind of, you know, desert plains, and it creates that kind of classic feeling of what you just imagine from those sort of nuclear towns, really, I guess, like that you sort of see in, you know, you saw it in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Just
something about those sort of, you know, those kind of fabricated towns where people go to kind of, you know, because they're just working on something. Yeah, and again, that was another thing they built, like, you know, they built their sort of replica of it, the exteriors, you know, in that way. Again, the classic, they don't sort of make them like this anymore. Yeah, so that was, yeah. And I actually, I don't know if you, did you see the IMAX trailer for this that came out around the time of the second trailer?
Yes, I did.
Because
yeah,
that was one that I was, that was probably my favorite of all the trailers so far, I think. And probably partly because I haven't been able to watch it again, because you just get that one shot.
You get it at one time.
In the
yeah.
cinema, yeah. But that was, yeah, like that. And just, yeah, when you see it in the full scale, you know, it's, yeah, quite amazing.
Yeah, it's really impressive. So I found a use of sound right from the start of the trailer to be quite effective. I don't know what you thought of that, but it's something quite haunting about the clicks at the start. I think it's from a Geiger counter. I'm not a scientist. Mm. I know nothing about science. I lasted a week on A-level physics before I sagged it off. But what do you think of the sound and then the score as well by Ludwig Göransson?
Yeah, that was something similar. I felt the exact same as you, that I thought, I presume it's sort of, yeah, representing a Geiger counter, some sort of measurement of clicks, but yeah, there's something really sort of skin prickling about it. And again, it just, I don't know, it just, even though it's like so small, it just manages to sort of feel epic. And in Nolan's films, there just always seems to be that sort of, that attention to detail to everything like that. And again, to sort of, you know, drop a mention of my current Total Film feature,
yeah,
again.
Please do.
But sort of being there in the sound mix as well, it's quite amazing when you sort of see just how much it's poured over everything that they sort of, you know, are doing. And just like the focusing on just such a small sort of piece of footage at a time, and just, you know, just trying different things with the sound level and the mix. And he's throughout his films, obviously, sometimes even controversially, he's been quite daring with the sound mixes, like,
yeah.
Sort of say in something like Interstellar particularly, but yes, and so that this felt like of a piece with that. But there's that, those kind of clicks that you sort of talk about, and then sort of just the sirens and stuff as well.
Yeah.
And what that kind of brings, and how that sort of adds to the tension ratcheting up, and the sort of clicks. And I loved Hans Zimmer's Dunkirk soundtrack as well, that sort of stopwatch ticking kind of, you know,
yeah,
sort of the tension that brought. And it kind of, that this sort of vaguely reminded me of this, although obviously it was not kind of hugely Zimmer-esque. But yeah, it's just and I heard some snippets of Ludwig's score, you know, in the sort of session I was on. And it's just, again, it's just amazing, and just how sort of how varied he is, really. He's just, yeah, because he kind of can seem to do anything, really.
Yeah. And I think the music plays a key role in, as you say, like sort of building up that tension. So it does play like a thriller and a drama, not necessarily like a straight biopic. It's not sentimental at all, the music. It's just sort of like,
no,
it's scary. And the Geiger counter noise always reminds me of, I don't know if you watched Chernobyl, you know, that TV series.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did.
Because the use of sound in that was like I still have nightmares about that show.
I don't watch loads of TV, really. You know, on the whole, but that was one I did watch, and it was one of those things that is kind of amazing but also just horrible to watch at the same time. So
yeah,
it's one of those things that I'm sort of kind of glad I saw it, but it was, yeah, it was quite an experience, really.
Yeah, my boyfriend watched it twice. I was like, the second time you're watching it on your own, I will not be there for that. I imagine this will be similar in terms of quite a an intense nightmarish experience. Just just even hearing those noises, I think it's so clever that the trailer starts with that. Yeah. It sort of tells you what you're in for.
Yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, and it kind of just the whole trailer really creates that feeling of what I often find myself thinking with films like this is like, well, everyone knows what happens. Basically, that's almost a big challenge of something. This everyone kind of knows what's the outcome is going to be, but then you still just find yourself feeling so like on the edge of your seat, you know, and as they're kind of building up to it. I mean, and I suppose because it was just such a scary and sort of monumental thing that, yeah, it still just feels, yeah, like you're watching a tense thriller. And I felt like with this trailer, I don't know if you had a similar thought, but I felt sort of that this felt like they'd kind of put together the most commercial trailer for this film sort of by this point, I guess. Getting closer to release, I guess, wanting to draw in the people for whom, you know, it might just have sounded like a, you know, a standard historical biopic from the outside. And it almost had sort of like, I felt like there was like a heist thriller element, which sort of took me by surprise in this trailer when they were sort of assembling the sort of, you know, the scientists.
Yeah,
that felt almost like, right, we're assembling a kind of a crack team for this mission, which gave it that sort of feel of almost, yeah, almost that sort of heist movie flavor to me, which was a kind of, you know, unexpected thing.
Yeah, I think, but even just having like World War the Nazis, they're ahead of the game. Like it's a race, isn't it? It's a race to the to the clock. The heist thing makes complete sense. I didn't actually think of that, but I do agree that, because I've been talking about this a lot, about how do you market a movie like this? Like obviously the Batman one's easy to market. It's Batman. Dunkirk, everyone knows the story of Dunkirk. Like personally, I'd never heard of Oppenheimer because we weren't taught about it at school. Like I don't know, like in America they talk about it, but here we weren't. Was it on my syllabus? I even did history at uni. So I was like, how do you market this movie? And I think you're right. I think this trailer does a really good job of making it exciting, especially with a countdown at the end. You've got that big red button as well. It's definitely trying to widen the market, I think, compared to like, yeah, because like with Interstellar, sci-fi, Tenet, sort of sci-fi action, like this is definitely harder to market. I kind of feel for the marketing team in a way, because it's definitely a tough job. I suppose they just have to sell it on Christopher Nolan, but also the cast. I mean, this is a good time to talk about the cast. The cast is incredible. There's been loads of talk about everyone's in this movie, and I think this trailer compared to the last one, we see a lot more of Cillian Murphy.
Yeah you sort of see more of everyone really, don't you? But it's looking like an amazing role and sort of performance for him. And I've sort of heard nothing but good things really and praise for his performance. And obviously, again, yeah, he's got these five previous collaborations with Nolan where it's always been in a supporting role. And in the later two Batman films, they were pretty much cameos.
Yeah.
But he's always been kind of good value in those. And obviously, he's an actor people love. People love him in Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, you know.
I haven't either. Again, I was saying I'm not really a big TV watcher.
Yeah.
But, people obviously love him in that. And, I think it's, again, he's, what you kind of gather from the book is he's such a fascinating character and so sort of contradictory. And I guess, you know, maybe sometimes in fiction there's a tendency to maybe simplify characters down a bit, and you know, you have kind of you know, stock characters, or you know, they're kind of one thing. But he was such a sort of weird mix of contradictions. It seemed like kind of ridiculously sort of like a scientific genius, ridiculously intelligent, but also kind of naive in various ways. And he was sort of a family man, but like a philanderer. And he was obviously like a scientific genius, but he sort of was also really loved, you know, like the arts, and was, you know, stuff like that as well, was a real sort of aesthete. So he seemed like this really sort of fascinating guy to dig into. So I'm really intrigued to see what Cillian Murphy does with that, especially as, like Nolan said, it's very much a sort of subjective film, sort of following him and giving you putting you right there with him and his experience. So I'm intrigued to see, for what that's going to be like.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've seen him in a lead role before. I think because I haven't seen Peaky Blinders. Mm. So
yeah, that's sort of his kind of, in a way, his defining career role, isn't it, so far? But
Yeah, so I don't know what to expect, but I think in here you kind of get a glimpse between, because he's so excited at the start about his project, etc. I think we only get a very brief glimpse at the end with like a shot. It's his eyes, and he just looks like he's in despair. So I think it's nice that we get a glimpse of sort of his journey, his emotional journey, because obviously he was then traumatized by what happened. But really excited for his performance, and of course, as you said, we get to see some other, actors pop up here. Matt Damon plays a big role in this trailer, I think, out of all of them. So he plays, for those who don't know, Leslie Groves, who's the army, I suppose the army man, who is like director of the Manhattan Project, which is the creation of the atomic bomb. So they've worked together before, Damon and Nolan, on Interstellar, although it's like a sort of brief cameo. I don't know how to
And it was
describe
kind of a
it.
surprise, wasn't it? It wasn't sort of widely known about pre-release, I don't think. So he's kind of just like, when you're watching it, it's like, wow, that's Matt Damon, you know. But yeah, I suppose it's sort of an extended cameo, maybe I call it, because he's in it a reasonable amount, isn't he? But it sort of kind of plays on the fact that you didn't know it was going to be him, and then it's kind of this person you recognize. But yeah, so he gets a couple of the key lines in this trailer, doesn't he? And again, I felt like that's like I felt like they were kind of dropped in that, like I say, trying to make the most commercial trailer possible, really, for this kind of. So he's there to show you the, you know, the stakes. He's there to impress it, like this is the most important moment in the history of the world. And there's also this other nice line which I like, and which again, when I first interviewed Nolan about the film, because we did a preview issue with the film as well, kind of at the end of last year. And he's basically the one thing he said that he was really intrigued by was this fact that you sort of get in the book that their sort of calculations were showing that there was like a small chance that when they press this button and sort of set off the bomb, that it could ignite the atmosphere and sort of destroy the world. But then they went ahead and sort of pressed it anyway. And so that to me wasn't surprising. It was, you know, like it was kind of when I saw that in there, I was like, oh yeah, that's very much, you know, what he was interested in. So it was kind of exciting to see that will play a sort of key role in the film. And yeah, again, that's kind of adding to that tension and that sort of I love that exchange between sort of Damon and Murphy in the trailer where they're sort of talking about when he's saying like, what are the chances? And he says like near
Near
zero. And
zero.
I just kind of enjoy that. And I feel like I'll try and use that near zero, you know, in life whether, you know, more often.
I thought that line was quite not funny, but amusing. But I
Yeah,
think
no, it is, yeah. More than you'd expect,
people
yeah.
say Nolan's not funny. I think his films are funny. Well, I find humour in it.
I've heard this argument as well before about like I find it weird that people sometimes take the argument that his films are sort of cold, but I completely disagree with that. I think they're, you know, often very emotional. So, and yeah, and definitely they frequently have funny moments. And yeah, and that's another thing which again you just wouldn't expect from this. You would expect it to be just completely gloom and
Doom and
you
gloom.
know, yeah, and sort of dark. And whereas yeah, so I sort of appreciated that really. And I thought it was interesting in this trailer that you didn't get a huge amount of black and white in this trailer, whereas the kind of especially the first teaser was almost all black and white. And obviously it's got, I don't know how much it's going to be in it, but it's obviously going to play a key role in the film. But obviously I don't know if that's going to be, yeah, like when it comes to it, what percentage is going to be black and white. But I imagine it's going to at least be significant. I mean, I couldn't really guess even what it's going to be, but whereas you obviously only get minimal glimpses of that in this trailer compared to the earlier ones. But I'm so intrigued to see that on an IMAX screen, because they obviously kind of developed this new sort of black and white IMAX film to sort of shoot it on. And I just can't wait to see what that's going to look like. It's just to sort of soak in those visuals on an IMAX screen. I just yeah just can't I'm really yeah really really intrigued to see what the black and white's going to look like, because when it was first announced, I wondered even if the whole film was going to be black and
Well, that
white,
was a
because
popular
yeah
theory online, wasn't it?
so yeah so I've been intrigued about that aspect since it first sort of came out, and they released the first image and everything. So yeah, that's a bit that really excites me.
Because I think the first trailer was Robert Downey Jr.'s doing a narration, right? Which is why, because my guess is that, I don't know, but it's that the courtroom scenes and sort of after the bomb's gone off are the black and white sequences, like the, I suppose, the colour's been drained from the world. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what ratio it'll be or anything, I think. But obviously, a significant amount, hence why they developed the new technology. It feels like it would be a significant amount anyways.
Yeah. And that's something as well, which kind of going back to that sort of memento that I mentioned earlier, that's something that I've always loved about his films and kind of been sort of, again, hooked on from the start, is that, like with Memento, I was so intrigued. It's like, how are they going to work this structure? How's that going to make any sense for like a sort of, you know, a mystery film like this? And then in Insomnia, they kind of, there's the sort of, you know, the never-ending daytime aspect, which again flips the kind of convention on its head. And then even in Batman Begins, it kind of obviously juggles the timelines in a way that's kind of really, really obviously easy to follow. And it's not like kind of, yeah, super complicated, but it does it in a really sort of like lean way where there's just no kind of like fat on it at all. It's just straight in there, and it really just really is just so impressive the way that's kind of edited. And then from there, there's always been something interesting about the sort of narrative structure. And like Dunkirk, for example, I knew going into that, I knew you had these three different, you know, like land, sea and air sort of aspects to it. But then when I started watching, I was like, oh wow, so they're all play out on different
times.
But it's that thing that to try and kind of explain it or write it down on paper, it just sounds so confusing. But when you're actually just watching it, you're just like,
it makes sense.
Oh, yeah, this just makes sense, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's something, you know, more to it with Oppenheimer, but I don't really know what that will be yet, you know, if anything. But
yeah, well, I'm a big defender in that the Tenet, the way they move through time and Tenet's actually pretty simple. They just move backwards. Like, I know people say it's confusing, but in my head, I think you just have to simplify it as much as possible.
Yeah.
But also, does it, like, I feel with films like that, does it really matter? Like, you just have to go with it.
No.
I think, especially with something like Tenet.
I can't remember what's the quote from Clemence Posey's character where it's like, feel, don't think, or something along those lines. And that's what I feel like, that's just advice to you sort of watching the film.
Literally, my dad's, you just kind of go with the flow. After he saw Tenet was that quote.
Yeah, so you just got to go with it. And if I think, like, what I did is I sort of really went with it on the first viewing, and then when I saw it a second time, I think I just tried so hard to sort of follow everything, you know, having already seen it once, and I got myself even in more of a sort of, you know, in more knots. And then again, so then when I went back again after that, I was like, right, I'm just going with the flow again a bit more, you know. And it just made more sense that way.
Yeah. And this one, I think, I'm interested to see how he plays with time. I mean, it's a longer film, isn't it, this? It's like 3 hours, nearly 3 hours.
Yeah.
So hopefully loads of playing with time. Although then it makes it longer for me to watch it again, because it's another 3 hours of my life. But more than happy to get back to Nolan. I kind of want to talk a bit more about the cast. We sort of mentioned, so we had a lot less Robert Downey Jr. in this one compared to the first trailer. But we see Emily Blunt here, who plays his wife, Kitty. Also, I love Benny Safdie popping up. He plays physicist Edward Teller. I thought Benny Safdie was amazing recently, and I don't know if you've seen it, but Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. He's a great actor. But also we get Florence Pugh, who I think might be my favourite actress at the moment. I'm so excited for her. She's in Dune 2 as well. And she plays Jean, with whom he had an affair. And I think we also get a bit of kind of Frodo at this at the end, don't we? Who, I'm not too sure who he's playing, but he's at the end of the trailer sort of giving a little speech about how the world now has the power to destroy itself, which is a lovely, cheery way to end the trailer. But yeah, what do you think about the sort of little bits of the cast that we see here? Like, you must be excited about how big this cast is.
Oh yeah, that was something that, again, I think everyone felt this when the film was sort of in production, and we kind of, you know, the cast news was kind of leaking out, and just it seemed like every day they were just adding like a new sort of A-lister an A-lister or a recognizable sort of character.
Well, that and Barbie. And I feel like we're going to see all of Hollywood on the same day when these films come out.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be, it's going to be crazy when actually comes to watching this film and there's, it just feels like everyone is kind of recognizable face in some way. So I'm excited about that. I'm especially excited about, yeah, seeing him sort of, you know, working presumably a bigger role with Matt Damon than was in Cilla, because yeah, Matt Damon's just, he's just someone I just love as an actor, and just really sort of warmed him, and I can really see him sort of working in that kind of role as well. Yeah, Robert Downey Jr., I'm interested to see what he does there and kind of a different role for him. Same as you, like, I just absolutely love Florence Pugh. I think she's just, you know, I think she'll end up being one of the all-time greats. She's just kind of so good in everything she does. And there's just others I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see Josh Hartnett in it as well. There's Ernest Lawrence, who's kind of, he's another physicist who is kind of, you know, good friends with Oppenheimer. But he nearly did a couple of Nolan films back in his earlier days, you know, 20 odd years ago.
Yeah.
So now that's finally come around. He's finally doing a film with him. So I'm intrigued to see what he does. Yeah. And there's just, and apologies if I don't pronounce his name right, but David Dastmalchian.
Yeah.
He obviously, he had a tiny role in The Dark Knight as well. So,
well, Nolan. Because I think, so he, David Dastmalchian has an interesting story with Nolan. I presume you know this about sort of, that he was like a drug addict, and then this role sort of gave him a second chance at life. So it's nice to see that sort of come, his role in The Dark Knight come full circle. I absolutely adore David Dastmalchian. I recently saw The Boogeyman, and he's in it one scene. And I was like, I need more David, like immediately. Yeah. But he's not even, it's mad to people who aren't even in the trailers yet.
Yeah.
Rami Malek, I don't think we've seen him yet.
No, he's probably the biggest name in a way, maybe, that we haven't seen yet. Just because, I mean, in terms of being like an Oscar winner, obviously. And then Alden Ehrenreich, I feel like we haven't
Solo,
seen.
Solo, Han Solo, yeah.
So Alex Wolff, I don't think we've seen him. Yeah, it's just going to be like, get Gary Oldman supposedly in it as well.
Oh, is he? Well, that makes sense.
Which, again, yeah, but I haven't seen him, so I don't know. I'm trying to think who else. Yeah, we get a tiny glimpse of Tom Conti as Albert Einstein as well in this trailer, which that surprised me, even though, again, from the reading the book, I knew that there was that kind of, you know, Einstein connection, but that was kind of interesting to see him there.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's just, and I think as well, to me, that you kind of get it a bit in the trailer and just from the general sense of the film, but that to me really just adds to that event film sort of feeling about this, you know, that again, what could on paper just be a sort of dry historical biopic, then you really feel like, wow, this, I mean, whoever you are, there's going to be an actor you like because there's just so many amazing actors in it.
Yeah.
And it really, I don't know, it just gives it like a kind of like a sense of occasion almost, you know, like it just, you just feel that, right, this is like a serious piece of cinema where there's this like absolutely ridiculous ensemble, you know, it just makes it feel like a real event.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested, I think, as you said, Robert Downey Jr., because we've been living with Tony Stark for like, I don't know how many years, it feels like decades. But yeah, we've been living with him as Tony Stark for so long now, then his first post-MCU role was Doolittle, which was awful. Literally one of the worst things I've ever seen. I'm so sorry, Robert Downey Jr., I do love you. But so it's nice. I think this will really remind us after Doolittle, like, how good Robert Downey Jr. is. I think he's amazing as Tony Stark. I think a lot of people are so sniffy about MCU performances, but he really owned that character. So I'm excited to see Robert Downey Jr. in this. Although that, it was a bit of a surprise. I think that surprised me when he got cast, because I think just because I was hurt by Doolittle so much.
I haven't seen Doolittle.
Please don't. Save yourself.
I didn't make a huge effort to see it, but it's sort of intriguing to see him do sort of more kind of character work like this. And I agree. I think he was great as Tony Stark. And obviously, he kind of really set the whole tone for the MCU, with that sort of first film. But exciting to see him do something a bit different and a bit more. That was so much like Robert Downey Jr., the movie star, whereas I think this would probably be more Robert Downey Jr., you know, the character actor.
Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about sort of lighting, because I feel like, it was in the first trailer as well, I really like how we have these sort of like flickers, I think is a good way of describing it, sort of throughout, which I'm guessing is like the nuclear reaction. Again, I literally know nothing about science. I hope to be educated by this movie. But in terms of the visuals, like how it looks like visually, what are your impressions of that?
Yeah, again, like I think it's representing, yeah, the sort of, you know, scientific, yeah, the react, the sort of, you know, the reactions, the sort of elemental reactions, etc. Again, I'm no scientist, so please don't sort of quote me on this. And again, I know from interviews, because speaking to Nolan, and I also spoke to Andrew Jackson, who's the visual effects supervisor, and Scott Fisher, who's the special effects supervisor. And basically they wanted to, like, Nolan's thing was they wanted everything to be photographed, basically everything to be like a real thing, you know, photographed. And then if the computer was going to be used, it'd be kind of layering things and stuff like that, rather than just creating whole things out of the computer. And again, I just, as I kind of sort of touched on earlier, I really just think it adds something so kind of tangible. And it reminded me a bit of the visuals in Interstellar as well. I don't know if you sort of thought kind of some of that sort of black hole space stuff we're seeing and the way that's created. And again, I don't know what it is. Again, perhaps people consider it snobbiness or whatever, but there's something about CGI when it's overused. Of course it's used well a lot of the time, and of course it kind of, you know, can be a lot of fun, and a lot of films I really enjoyed obviously use it heavily. But there's just something about it where you can just feel like, you know, when there's no real sets and everything feels a bit weightless, and I feel like I've got sort of quite a harsh eye for CGI, I suppose, that I quite often feel like, yeah, you know, fair enough, they've done a good job of that, but it still just doesn't look quite real.
I agree. I'm growing more tired thinking of a recent superhero film I've seen recently where I really didn't like the CGI.
Okay.
It's just, I don't know. There's a lot of talk at the moment with CGI about, if you look at Marvel, about how those CGI artists are like complaining about how rushed everything's being. So it's nice that I suppose this actually takes the time to like, sometimes all you need is that time to invest in the practical effects. Not everything needs to be green screen, does it?
Yeah. And it's like, in a way that I've just always preferred it in films, like when you can get anything practical, and even when there's like, you know, like puppets and things like that, I've always kind of preferred that over just pure sort of CGI stuff. So I really like those tangible elements. Again, just sort of can't wait to see them on the big screen really as well.
Yeah, although now you said puppets, I'm like, well, Nolan ever worked with the Muppets? Because whenever I hear the word puppets, my brain goes Muppets. Maybe one day we'll see him hang out with the Muppets or on Sesame Street. You never know. He's an unpredictable fellow. At the end of the trailer, like, what did you feel? Like, did it get you more excited? Because obviously I know you were already excited about this film.
Yeah. I'd say it just confirmed the ridiculously high levels of excitement I had previously, really. Yeah, so just maybe just desperate to actually sort of
see
the whole film, like seeing kind of new glimpses of footage and you know, different sides to it. Like I said, that sort of, you know, that kind of heist movie vibe, you know, just made me think, yeah, and seeing a bit more of a glimpse of the other actors as well, a bit more of Killian's performance, just made me think, yeah, come on, I just need to see the whole thing now. I had a dream, like, it was either last night or the night before that I saw it. And it was one of those, this happens to me often, like this is how much I sort of obsess over films, that as particularly know the ones that I dream about seeing them. And it's always like, it's never a good dream. It's always like things are going wrong with the projection. And in this one, they just stopped it like kind of two thirds of the way through. And someone came out and was like, oh yeah, sorry, we're just kind of changing the rules. It'll just be a while. Don't worry. Just completely uncaring. And I was like, but you've just completely ruined like the rhythm of this film. Like, and the lights came up and everything. And so then I was kind of relieved. It's a silly thing where I was relieved when I woke up and I was like, oh, thank God I didn't have like a terrible first viewing experience of Oppenheimer. But yeah, come on, roll on July. That's what I say.
Know. I'm excited to see it. And I presume the press screenings will be in IMAX. They have to be. They've got to be,
haven't they? They've got to show it off at its best, really, haven't they?
Yeah. Will you be doing a double bill on release day with Barbie as well, Matt? I am asking everyone this because I'm very invested in this Barbie Oppenheimer world. I've now have got the conspiracy theory that it's planned. But the two studios have sort of planned this as like the perfect double bill, because it, like, surely like someone there is like, this is a great idea.
Well, the thing is, it will unsurprise you to know that I'm more excited about Oppenheimer than Barbie, even though I'm very much looking forward to Barbie. But if I can only see one, I'm very much team Oppenheimer in that battle. But of course, I love Greta Gerwig. I love Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling. So I'm very intrigued to see that film. But yeah, it's Oppenheimer all the way for me. I'll be seeing Oppenheimer again, I think, before I see Barbie. But I'll be seeing Barbie as well, of course, but not with anywhere near the desperation of seeing Oppenheimer.
Barbie is our therapy after seeing Oppenheimer, because it's going to be so depressing. We need Margot Robbie to cheer us up. Well, I'm excited. You'll have to maybe come back on the podcast, Matt, when you've seen it, so we can have a good natter about the film.
That'd be cool.
Oh, thanks for joining me today, Matt. And if people want to see more of your work, you know, where can we find you?
Probably the best place is just my Twitter, which is just at Matt Maytum. So that's MattMaytum. And that's, share most of my work and stuff on there. And obviously in Total Film Magazine as well. If you ever want to pick up a copy of that, that's where I mostly am. So, yeah.
And as you mentioned, the cover feature at the moment is Oppenheimer, written by yourself.
Yeah.
So I have read it. It is good. I'm not just saying that. It is good. So please have a read. And thanks for joining us today, Matt.
Yes, and thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really fun to talk about.
No worries. Thanks. That was me and film journalist Matt Maytum discussing a recent trailer for Christopher Nolan's next feature, Oppenheimer. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter at NolanMe, NolanYou, and get in touch too with your thoughts on the podcast and trailer. See you next time.